Hi, I'm Patti Schmidt, and this is Inside the Music, a program that looks at the context of music, the how and the why, backgrounds, insights, and hidden histories, as well as documentaries and biographies that take you inside the music. May you live in interesting times. It's both a blessing and a curse in China, and it captures the essence of China's turbulent 20th century. Music has been a barometer. It has championed political ideologies and signaled changes in the tolerance for dissent as the winds of history swept through the Middle Kingdom. Today on Inside the Music, you'll hear the second in a two-part series called China's Long Song. Host Mei Han, a musician and scholar, takes us on a personal journey inside China's 20th century and through its musical revolutions. There's additional narration from Vancouver music producer Matthew McFarlane.
The piece is called Jianghe Shui, or River Water. It's often used to depict the suffering of the Chinese people in the past. Its melody holds a sad memory of invasion, of war, and of tremendous loss.
This sense of loss began in 1840 with the Opium Wars, when China suffered a series of defeats at the hands of European powers. The harsh reality was that Chinese lances and knives were not able to confront powerful Western cannons and guns.
There is a saying in China, "We eat with wooden chopsticks, and the Westerners eat with metal forks and knives." Metal cuts wood. This colonization completely crashed China's self-perception of being the center of the world. China, or Zhongguo in Chinese, means central kingdom.
Military defeat was difficult to accept, but even worse was the realization by her citizens of the inadequacies of China's social and economic development. As a nation, China was proud of its past, but felt an enormous need for change. Many people, especially intellectuals, turned their rage and shame into actions intended to save China. They burned opium stores, cut off their braided Chinese queues, and went to Europe to study.
One of them was my mother's father. He was one of the last scholars who went through the imperial exam and went to England afterwards. When he came back to China, he set up a high school in his hometown. For him and many other scholars, the best way to change China was to adopt Western culture at the grassroots level. This piece is called Chinaman from 1910. This type of song was created for public schools, but not for teaching students music. The melody was simply a vehicle for the lyrics, which conveyed nationalistic and patriotic ideas to youth.
Within 10 years, these school song tunes spread well beyond schools into political rallies. This tune, Upending the Warlords, was sung nationwide during a violent uprising in 1925.
You probably recognize this tune as Frère Jacques, a French song, but not for the Chinese. They know it as Da Dao Lie Qiang or Da Dao Tu Hao. And good luck convincing them it's actually French. Many years ago, there was a Chinese musician moved to Vancouver and introduced this tune to my husband Randy as a Chinese folk song. And Randy said, "Wait a minute, this is a French tune." And she said, "No, this is a Chinese folk song." She really fought hard for that. In fact, many school songs were simply foreign melodies refitted with Chinese lyrics. The educators believed that Western tunes were better suited for schools than Chinese music. Even music from competing Asian countries were considered better than Chinese melodies.
Another influence was American jazz. This famous song from a 1940s movie is called Night in Shanghai. It captures the excitement of Shanghai in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, particularly the city's vibrant nightlife. For decades, while the rest of the country suffered, Shanghai was a paradise for the international rich.
This type of songs were known as 时代曲, meaning modern tunes or modern songs. The composer who best represents this trend was Li Jinghui. He was an editor for children's magazine in Shanghai, but it became famous because he composed lots of children's songs and wrote music for movies. The most famous song Li ever wrote was called 何日君再来, translated as When the Gentleman Will Come Back. The song was originally written as a movie soundtrack in 1938 and sung by Zhou Xuan, the highest paid singer-actress in China back then. The song was an immediate hit. Lovely flowers do not bloom very often. A wonderful view does not exist very long. Sorrow covers my smiling brow. Missing you brings tear to my eyes. After you have parted today, when will you come back again? When you have emptied your cup, please eat a little. Life has few opportunities for intoxication. Without pleasure, everything is even harder to bear. Come, come, come. Have a drink and talk later. If we part today, when will you come back again? The music is about lust, sex, and love. Subjects that were not comfortable for Chinese to discuss or even to suggest. Not to mention that China was in war with Japan at that time. Politicians and left-wing critics strongly condemned Li's music as decadent and vulgar, labeling it as yellow, the color for pornography in Chinese culture. For the rest of his life, Li Jinghui was a target for every political campaign until he was mysteriously killed during the Cultural Revolution. And the singer Zhou Xuan was also persecuted under the communist regime and died in a mental asylum in 1957.
1937, while Shanghai frolicked and indulged, a nationwide anti-Japanese war erupted in response to the Japanese invasion of Beijing and the massacre of over 300,000 Chinese in Nanjing.
This song is called the graduation song. It called on students to join the army to defend the country. Many artists voluntarily went to the front line to support the Republican army and the communist guerrillas.
This next song, the guerrilla song, was popular in the Red Army, who were considered guerrillas during the anti-Japanese war.
My father was a Red Army soldier. He joined the troop in 1936 when he was only 12 years old. His family was from the countryside of Shanxi, a very poor region on the banks of the Yellow River. His father died when he was very young. His mother's feet was bound so that they were only about 6 inches long, and it was too painful for her to even walk, so she couldn't work. As my father was the oldest, he had to shoulder the burden of supporting the family. He worked as a shepherd, and one day, one of his sheep stepped on and broke a bowl he borrowed from his landlord. This was very serious, and he was too scared to go home. His cousin, who was a year older, told him, "I heard that there is an army troop crossing the Yellow River not far from here, and they have food." My father left immediately, without even telling his mother. Upon finding the army troop, the commander looked at him and said, "You're not even tall enough to hold a gun. What can you do? Can you sing?" My father probably knew a few folk tunes, so they decided to put him in the morale squad to cheer up the troops. So when I asked him if he sang this guerrilla song back then, he said, "Of course." During the Korean War, my father met my mother, who was also an army entertainer, and they married in North Korea. My father remained in the army until he passed away a few years ago. Another song from the 1940s that my dad would have sung was The Yellow River.
This song is about the Japanese invasion and the Chinese resistance. It was composed by Xian Xinghai, a young talent who studied music in Paris from 1930 to 1935. He composed The Yellow River as a cantata in 1939, and it became well known in China as a choral work. But it became internationally famous when it was expanded into a piano concerto.
in February 1969, China and Russia had a military dispute over a tiny island called Zhenbaodao, or Treasure Island, on the China-Russian border. The pianist you're listening to, Yin Chengzong, was flown to the island, complete with a grand piano, by military helicopter. He performed the Yellow River Concerto outdoors for the soldiers in minus 40 degree weather.
Western music was fully embraced by the Chinese, traditional music was grossly ignored or even harshly attacked by music scholars. They believed it was inferior to Western classical music and that Chinese instruments were crude compared to the piano or the violin. King Zhu, a music scholar from the 1930s, had this to say.
In my opinion, there's only one type of music that can be considered art. That is Western music. In the opinion of some patriotic citizens, Western music coming to China is a form of art invasion. If this is true, then let it happen. It's obvious that Chinese music cannot compete with Western music. We have to choose between Chinese and Western music. We cannot have both.
Luckily, in spite of the unfavorable social and cultural environment, traditional music survived in China, and some forms even grew. For instance, the solo music for the erhu, the two-string bowed fiddle, was initially created during this time. The erhu was adapted from a Mongolian instrument introduced to China around the 13th century. It was used as a folk instrument to accompany singing. Unlike other Chinese instruments, the qin, the zheng, or pipa, which all had rich solo repertoires, solo erhu works were only developed in the 20th century. One of these pioneers in building these repertoire was A Bing, a blind street musician. You're listening to Er Quan Ying Yue, The Moon Shadow in the Second Fountain. This piece is my favorite erhu piece of all time. I can listen to this piece every day, and each day it gives me chill and gives me new meaning of this piece. I often think about A Bing. He was just a street musician, much like what you see outside a liquor store or in the subway station. nobody paid much attention to him. And when they did, he was looked down upon. He played on the street to survive, on cold days, hot days, good weather or bad weather, and even when he was very sick. But the hardship never killed his creativity. In 1950, Yang Yinliu, the director of the Music Research Institute, went to visit Abing. He brought a simple wire recorder to record Abing's music. Abing was so excited, he recorded 6 pieces for Mr. Yang. But Abing was not happy with his playing, since he had been very sick and out of practice. He told Miss Yang to come back in 6 months. He said, "Well, I have about 300 pieces to play for you." 6 months later, Abing passed away. He was buried together with his musical instrument. But he did leave us with 6 artfully crafted melodies. I was born and grew up in Beijing, where my family lived in the military compound. As a privileged family, we had a big apartment and many things that most Chinese families didn't have. And one of them is a gramophone and a box of records. I loved to listen to these records again and again. And one record I remember had a huge sunflower on the cover. But if looked at it closely, the sunflower was actually a photo of 100 or so dancers holding yellow fans in their hands. This cover suggested that as the sunflower turns to follow the sun, the Chinese people follow their leader. This was a recording of a song and dance extravaganza with over 3,000 performers. Its title song, "East is Red," was the personal anthem of China's famous leader Mao Zedong. From 1966 to 68, the first few years of the Cultural Revolution, every Chinese citizen had to sing this song every single day, and most probably more than once. Every morning, right after the bugle played the Chinese reveille, "East is Red" just burst from the loudspeakers in the compound. The whole family hurried to get up and gather in the living room. It's like a ritual ceremony. We faced the Chairman Mao's portrait on the wall and started singing "East is Red." "East is red, the sun is rising, China has brought the force of Mao Zedong. He amasses fortune for the people, hooray, his people's greatest ideal." Growing up in a communist family, I firmly believed what the Communist Party said about the Cultural Revolution, which was the class struggle between communists and capitalists. like millions of young people who were called the Red Guards then. I carried a little red book and collected hundreds of pins of Mao. I also learned every single tune composed during the Cultural Revolution, such as this one, 大海航行靠舵手, or Sailing the Seas Depends on the Helmsman. This is another song that millions of Chinese sung every day at political gatherings. I was too young to go to Tiananmen to have a chance to see Chairman Mao in person. I could only watch him on TV, standing on Tiananmen Tower and waving while millions of Red Guards walked by screaming, jumping, and chanting, Long live Chairman Mao! Long live Chairman Mao!
I'm Patty Schmidt, and on Inside the Music, we're listening to part two of China's Long Song. Your guides are Vancouver musician and scholar Mei Han and CBC music producer Matthew McFarlane.
But in daily life, Mao's reign was terrifying. People turned against neighbors, friends, and even family members, accusing each other of anti-revolutionary sympathies. The country was in turmoil. Many innocent people were killed.
My grandfather was over 80 years old when the Cultural Revolution erupted. He was labeled as an anti-revolutionary intellectual and was dragged out of his home, tied up and humiliated in public. My uncle looked at a postage stamp which had Mao's photo on it, and he critiqued the telephone pole behind it looked like a cross. For that, he was sentenced to prison for 15 years. These incidents were part of the daily terrors that deeply frightened me. Yet what scared me more was when I heard Mao said, this revolution is great, then we should have it in every 3 or 5 years. I asked my mother, how will I know which side to be on in the future Cultural Revolution when I grew up? What if I'm on the wrong side? Am I going to be killed? Of course. No mother could explain this to a 7-year-old. Now I live in Canada, a beautiful and peaceful country, and I'm married to a Canadian. Even though we share much in our present life, we had totally different pasts. When I was a little Red Guard in the 60s, my husband Randy was a long-haired West Coast hippie. Even now, he hums Beatles songs around the house. Once he asked me, what did you listen to when you grew up? I looked at him and said, do you really want to know? Then this melody came out of my squeaky voice. 我家的表叔说不尽没有大事不登门虽说是亲眷又不相认可他比亲眷还要亲。
爹爹和奶奶亲上半亲人这里的
This tune is called We All Have a Red Heart. From the title, you could probably tell it's not a traditional tune. It is from a revolutionary opera created in the 60s. There were 8 of these Yangbanxi, or model works, in total, and 6 Beijing operas and 2 ballets. And Mao's wife, Jiang Qing, was in charge of creating the Yangbanxi. He accomplished this by tearing a part of traditional Beijing opera form, replacing the characters of emperors, upper class, and ancient generals to communist workers, farmers, and soldiers. And of course, the enemy. The Western Orchestra was also added to traditional Chinese opera ensemble. One song I listened a lot was from the opera 智取威虎山, or Taking a Tiger Mountain by Strategy. In this story, an undercover Red Army commander went to the Tiger Mountain, an enemy-controlled area, to spy on their military setup. He sang this piece while riding along in the forest. The music is very heroic. It also includes the sound of wind and whip and horse neighing, a typical approach to the programmatic music created for working class.
In 1979, the new leader Deng Xiaoping paid a visit to Shenzhen, a town literally across the bridge from Hong Kong. Seeing the sharp contrast between Hong Kong's high-rises and Shenzhen's farmland, Deng realized how far behind China was and how isolated it was from the world. He then drew a circle on the local map and said, "I want Shenzhen to become China's Silicon Valley." Deng's visit to Shenzhen has since become the symbol for China's new era, the era of economic reform. The song we are listening to praises Deng's vision for the country's future in the post-Mao period. Quickly, the Chinese people were barraged with brands like McDonald's, Coca-Cola, and Nike. And pop music, mostly from Hong Kong and Taiwan, spread like wildfire almost overnight throughout China.
The night of the harbor is quiet. Waves are gently padding the ships. The young sailors are smiling in their sweet dreams.
This piece is called Night at the Navy Harbor. Composed in 1980, it's one of the first pop songs that swept China after the Cultural Revolution.
However, not everybody was ready for this. this piece was criticized for potentially weakening soldiers' fighting spirit. One critic even said, "How can soldiers go to sleep? They should be on guard at all time." The song stirred up some very heated discussions in China. But soldiers loved it. I even saw some marching to it, which I thought quite bizarre. In 1986, there was a concert held at the Workers' Stadium in Beijing. The stadium was packed with over 50,000 people. As the concert proceeded, a singer came onto the stage carrying a guitar, a modern instrument for Chinese back then. He wore a changshan, the traditional long outfit for Chinese men, and a hat with a red star, which symbolizes communism. This very unusual combination of old and new, Western and Chinese, immediately made the audience curious. But when he started to sing, the curiosity became shock. The singer is Cui Jian, who is now considered the father of Chinese rock music. His angry voice and the violent lyrics certainly reflected frustration and the anger towards China's totalitarian society. The government was aware of the development of rock music in China and concerned about the antisocial and anti-authority nature of Cui Jian's music. He was not allowed to be on TV, and his performances were kept strictly underground in small clubs. Audiences were mostly foreigners living in Beijing or close friends of the band.
At dawn this morning, the streets of Beijing looked and sounded like a war zone. Beijing residents were still challenging the might of the People's Liberation Army, but it was a hopeless cause.
The city is in shock. The military is in control. But it is control won at a terrifying price. Their merciless storming of Tiananmen Square has cost many lives. Hospital sources in Beijing say at least 1,400 people were killed. They say 10,000 were hurt, and the worst of it may not be over yet.
When the army finally arrived in Tiananmen Square, the massacre began.
The army had a statement a few hours ago, a frightening statement given all that has gone on. It said the assault on Tiananmen Square was, quote, just an initial victory. And it said there was still a long fight ahead against, and again we quote, the dregs of society.
The People's Army, someone shouted, must not attack the people. Many protesters showed remarkable courage, gathering about a monument in the center of the square, waiting to be arrested or shot.
I was there. I was in Beijing. I was at home that night and listened with horror to the thumping of machine gun in the distance. It lasted almost the whole night.
X and I went out. We were running aimlessly from one hospital to another. I was numbed with shock when I saw bodies lying on the floor and blood was everywhere. I felt totally betrayed. All what I had believed was shattered by the gunshots. I remember for the whole month before this happened, all I did was to send my daughter to kindergarten and pack some lunch and water and set off to Tiananmen Square. And one day, Cui Jian showed up at the hunger strike site at Tiananmen Square with a red band tied on his forehead. He looked like a fighter who was ready for his last battle in front of many students in failing health and frustrated crowd. He sang this song, "I Have Nothing."
After the Tiananmen massacre, Cui Jian and his music was repressed, and the pop music of China became less political. But the variety and breadth of Chinese pop continues to grow.
This next song is musically not much a mix of East and West, but the idea behind this genre certainly has a Western influence. This is musical satire. This song is called Mary from Hunan. Hunan is a province in central China. The melody is developed from the local traditional opera called the Hua Gu Xi. The song is about a guy whose girlfriend is a tour guide, and she calls herself Mary. He doesn't like the fact that she uses a foreign name, even though she has told him that if her name is easy to remember for foreign tourists, she will get more tips. In the song, he uses old communist jargon to argue against her having a foreign name, but the truth is that he's only worried that one day she will have a blue-eyed baby. The person behind this satire is Yin Ga, a Chinese TV soap opera director trained in America. I wouldn't be surprised if he was inspired by Spike Jonze or Weird Al Yankovic. There's some similarities between the two. The singer Xue Cun
presented an image of a funny but pathetic guy who has an earthy tone in his voice and speaks with a royal accent. This is a Beatles song. The singers are imitating the sound of Beatles flying. The music you have heard up to this point has been very metropolitan and mostly from the dominant Han culture. But China is a big country. Besides Chinese culture, there are 55 minority groups, which all have rich traditions and music, many of which are still vibrant. I'm a Chinese Han, but I was fascinated about minority music. So I went into ethnomusicology to study minority music in China. In 1993, I went to research the music of Dong people in Guizhou. Most Dong villages are either located on the bank of rivers or deep in the mountains. Like many other minorities in southern China, the Dong singing tradition is very rich. They communicated through singing. They educated their children by teaching them songs. They fell in love through singing to each other. To them, singing is everything. Especially when it comes to marriage. The first step towards finding a good partner was to sing. Only at a singing ceremony could they find their true love. I haven't seen my lover for a long time. This made me uneasy. In my dream, I fly to meet my lover. If we don't see each other, the love is going to fade away. I'm so worried. I can't either sit or stand. This was a very intimate song between lovers traditionally. But now this has become a tourist attraction and the main income source for the villagers.
Light pop music has been the most popular form of entertainment in China for the last 20 years. Like Britney Spears in the United States, Chinese pop singers are usually very young and pretty with little artistic depth or vocal training. Big record companies can easily package them for the enormous teenage market.
这一红一豆的温泉竟是我孤单的思念飘零的一片叶就像你我的终结。As China rapidly moves towards becoming increasingly industrialized, life for people in the countryside has been changing significantly. Lots of young people have left their homes to look for jobs in cities, leaving their traditional lifestyle behind. As traditions meld, country to city, west to east, east to west, the music changes also. Tradition is a river, and the river is in constant motion. China's long song started with its first note at the headwaters of Yellow River. Over thousands of years, this song has grown and expanded. As the boatman sings, the Yellow River has 99 turns. At each turn, another stream merges, adding its influence. I hope China's long song continues to include all the sounds, voices, and music from the country, as the Yellow River brings the waters of every stream to the ocean. As the past and the future join together, the waters become deeper and wider. The deeper the river, the more life can live within, and the more secrets it can hold. Who knows where China's long song will take us next?
You've been listening to China's Long Song, a two-part series that looks inside the Great Wall at the music of the world's rising power, China. Today's episode was written and hosted by Mei Han and produced by Matthew McFarlane with assistance from Kathleen Flaherty. For more information on this show, go to our website at cbc.ca/insidethemusic. Stay tuned for more great programming on CBC Radio 1 and 2. I'm Patty Schmidt, and this has been Inside the Music. Thanks for listening.